Okay, I make it top of the hour, so we'll go ahead and get started. Welcome to Prime Time, the office hours for text, for NIOS, sorry, views of channels and was misreading stuff. The office hours for myself to answer questions about NIOS. We have a bunch of questions, so I'm going to go through and get them started. Please do keep the questions coming, though, because we will run out. And if we run out, we sit here in silence until office hours ends. Let's take a look. So Snowy is asking about Primetime Podcast. Yeah, so Sounder, the service I'm using, is shutting down in January, and so I don't see much reason to put any more effort into that. I am looking into alternatives. That is taking a little bit longer, though, because I want it to be dead simple, because hooray, thumbs up, simple is good. For now, you can go ahead and use the NIOS Wiki, which has transcriptions and audio transcriptions and audio files uploaded by Lex. Thank you so much for that. So that's that for that question. Origabus says, is it possible to mirror display to the texture? No. What you're asking for there is like screen sharing. And people think screen sharing should be like really simple. Let me show you why that is not. Screen sharing is basically video streaming. And like that's right now what the community are doing, right? They'll stream their screen to Twitch or some other like live streaming service, and then they'll get it in as a texture in the game. And people view the screen sharing feature that we might create as not that, but it literally is that, right? So we would have to do our own sort of video streaming somehow there. That's why we don't have that. It is a feature on our roadmap. You can find that on the NIOS GitHub and track that there. Until that exists, there are community solutions. Streaming it to Twitch, streaming it to your own RTMP server, streaming it to wherever the hell you want, provided it can get you out an RTMP feed. It's cool. You know, you can't just share a screen, though. It's not that simple. Next question. And Alex says, will a new podcast feed be created or shown on the community? That please, as the community member, don't do that. Lex is trying bits of software, which is okay. But what I don't want is anyone uploading it in a sort of RSS podcast Spotify format that isn't me, because then we start dealing with impersonation and it becomes a problem. I hate it when that kind of stuff happens. You know, you end up with sort of like, there are 20 different locations where you can listen to Primetime and none of them are official because someone got bored one day and decided to upload it, which is why the current situation is better than we've got. That is unfortunate that Sounder just decided to sort of up and close down shop, but we'll see. Something I've been thinking about is maybe moving the office hours over to like... over to some other host or some other tool. Sounder also recently emailed me a bunch of tools that they recommend, which is nice of them. I ideally don't want anything self-hosted, or if it is self-hosted, I want it to make sense being self-hosted. An example would be some sort of automated process to get it to the wiki, but then we don't get RSS, we don't get Spotify publishing. It's a mess. For now, the wiki is perfectly fine. It just doesn't let you know that it's happening. But if you remember when the event is, which is right now, then you can go ahead and check the wiki a couple of hours after that. It should be up. Let us move on to additional questions rather than speaking about the office hours over and over again, which is, it's fine. It's just a little bit meta. Let's speak about NIOS. So Ozzy has a question about a sync issue of request weight too large. That is actually explicitly covered on the StockSync page, and everything I have to say about StockSync is on that wiki page because I wrote it. Anything in addition that I will gain about that will also be on that page because I'm like very tired of dealing with sync issues, basically. So I only ever update that page whenever I have anything, because I'm just tired, right? There's like 4 or 5 sync issues per day. We are working on resolving that, but hand wavy, update issues, etc. There are specific guidances for that too many requests problem. I have noticed a really good way of solving that is to stop saving worlds. I have a lot of people that I'm aware of who will continually save new versions of their worlds for no real reason. Come up with a system that either lets you keep the same copy of a world over multiple iterations. You might have like a working copy that isn't public, and then a public copy that might be 2 copies. But no, these people have got sort of like 11 copies of the same world. That can lead to that problem quite quickly because saving a world is more strenuous on the cloud than saving items. And then the other solution to that is to think about what you're saving. I also see a lot of people who work on a project in a world and save it to that world. Let's say, I don't know, you're making a panel that does some cool wizardry stuff, right? They'll save it into a world and then continue to save that world. I'm like,
grab the panel, save it to your inventory. It will have a lot less issues syncing. Trust me. Like, there's no need to, basically, there's no need to continually make new worlds, is what I'm saying. Yeah, we don't have good version management tools, but, like, that's no excuse to also, like, double those problems, right? Also, make sure you're making use of group storage as well, where applicable. I get tired of passing world orbs around when there's no group available. It's like, well, you're hosting the world today, so you can you save a new version of it and add one to the version number? And I'm like, no, can you load the one from the group? The request rate one is literally, like, everything I have to say about it is on the window and stuff like that. Any additional questions, please do drop them in that text thread, and I'll get to them in the order that they appear. There are currently no questions, so I'll go ahead and mute and wait for questions. Ramp has a question which says, any comments to the latest Carol post? No comments. Lou asks, do you happen to know how much, how the official Neos Patreon money is divvied up, like how much goes to server costs and the like? The last time I was aware of the server costs, they were in the range of, like, the sort of 3,000 to 5,000 range per month, which is why I'm continually telling people not to cancel their Patreon, because at a certain point the cloud will become at risk, but to just lower it to the amount that they need for storage, and that way it's still being paid for. People always say, like, oh, it just goes to Carol's pockets, and it's like, no, it also pays for the storage. As an example here, if you upload a gigabyte of data on your free account, we're paying for that. If you upgrade to Patreon and you have 25 gigabytes of data and you use that entire 25 gigabytes of data while paying for it, great. We're kind of like net neutral there, right? You know, you're paying for it. Money comes straight out of our account and goes into the server costs. But on the various things that you can do to, you know, mess around with storage, you can get to the point where it's like, cool, I've got like 5 terabytes of storage for free. And I'm like, great. Thank you for putting your cloud at risk. Beyond the cloud storage source, though, I have no idea. I just know that those are automatic. Like, it's a big pile of money, and the server costs come off the top of that big pile of money. I want to, once we get all this resolved, I want to sort of adopt an approach where we actually have the information as public as we can be. Now, there's information, of course, that we can't give out publicly, but there's so much stuff that we can that just, like, it doesn't, like, matter. We don't give it out because no one really does give it out, but there's no real, like, harm in doing it. A good example of this is a live streaming provider called Glimish. Glimish publicly discloses how much money is going through their business, and it's beautiful. You know, like, they don't share anything private, like the names and addresses of their employees or anything like that. But they're like, hey guys, we made this much money on subscriptions, because they have subscriptions like Twitch, and this much was taken with fees and costs and you know, tax, etc. And we gave this much out to you, the creators. And it's a lot better way to frame the whole revenue split that exists on live streaming platforms. For those unaware, there's a whole big hoorah right now because Twitch is switching to a 50-50 model, whereas it used to be a 70-30 model. YouTube, I believe, is still 70-30, as in the creator gets 70%, YouTube takes 30%. But what you can do if you start sharing those fees is you can, like, explain with a better conversation, hey guys, the reason why this is 50-50 or whatever it is because although it looks like 50-50, the government actually takes 25 of our 50, so we have, like, we get nothing. And then it looks a lot better, right? At that point, it's you have the lion's share of that too. Additionally, they show how much money they made via t-shirt sales, which is, like, usually nothing. Merchandise is a really good moneymaker if you can sell a lot. If you can't sell a lot, it's pointless. Moving forwards to additional questions, rather than me talking about streaming all day, which I could totally do, but I'm not going to. Rob says, I'm interested in getting better deformations on my characters. Is there a way to integrate trained machine learning models back as a deformer? No, that wouldn't be possible right now. You probably have to open up a GitHub issue for that. Better deformations occur with better weight painting. You can get, like, some really, really crazy weight painting that does a really good job. An avatar that just comes to mind, which, like, people in this chat might say, like, that's a bad example because of XYZ reason. I got it, right? It's an example I can remember, and I'm on the spot here, is the hyena-eared avatar that I see a lot in Neos. Though that, by default, has a lot of layers of clothing, which I believe are all separatable, as in you can take bits of it off, right? And the weight painting is set up such that, like, there's no clipping that I've noticed, and everything just, like, flows and looks good. Now, I've made avatars with clothing. It takes me forever to get to the point where, you know, if you bend your elbow doesn't shoot out the back of your clothing. In some cases, avatar creators will do something where they add a blend shape for when you're wearing clothing, where it just like makes your arm look like a pipe cleaner. But that's really like not like not the way that you should do it. You can even see that in video games these days as well. Like, take a look at things like long flowing outfits, so like skirts, dresses, robes, stuff like that in video games, and try and like swing your character around as fast as you can. See how that looks and how that works. And then when you have a problem of deformation, think about, hey, these AAA people can do it, so I can probably do it. Let's take a look. There's also a video, which I'm calling it famous because it's just in my head as like, oh my god, yes, from a user. I'll try and get a link for it. They talk about doing skirts for VRChat. And VRChat skirts are usually renowned for having like 200 bones and all being weight painted individually. And this user provided a guide to do a 3 or 4 bone skirt and have it absolutely perfect. And it's a really good video for basically like, here's how you're meant to do a skirt with weight painting. And I found that really good because, like I said, I struggle with weight painting. So I'll look that up when we get a lull in questions, or I'll drop it after in the text chat here. I've got a bunch of questions to get through though. Ozzy says, as for Nia's question, I recently got a facial tracker and want to know if there's any advice you have for adjusting avatars, namely the avatar expression driver. I would like you to very much consider the avatar's expression driver's property and all of them. I'd have to open it up. Actually, I do have the code base open so I can quote this from actual things. Sometimes I'm like, you need to specify the property that has volume in it, and someone comes back to me like 3 hours later and like, I don't know which one it means, and then I open up the code base, or I open up Neos, and it's not called volume, it's actually called like potato blah blah blah. I've just misremembered it. The problem is it's sometimes difficult for me to distinguish between my ability to go to that component and then have memory about it, and then what that component is actually called, right? Sometimes I don't remember what the property is called, I just know which order it is or what it looks like visually, not what it's called in terms of words. So now I'm here. Yes, so take a look at the volume source and silence source. Make sure that those are specified in your expression driver. The volume source can come directly from a volume meter. The silence source can basically be sort of 1 minus the volume meter. You can also do that with the SIL or silence thing on the Visium analyzer. There's like a Visium analyzer bar which will measure if you're not speaking. Those are very important. Once you've hooked those up, you can use volume suppression weight across the board. Now, volume suppression weight is so difficult because it wasn't really explained that I typed it up at some point. I don't remember where I put that. No searches on across the entirety of the Discord. Great. Volume, maybe I did put it on the... It'd help if I could spell suppression. Volume suppression did not match in a volume suppression. Ah, I put it in the love this. Let's document stuff in a really obscure location. Here are my raw notes on volume suppression stuff. Volume suppression is very important. What volume suppression does when it's set up correctly, I know that's a lot of information, but like, go for it. Volume suppression when set up correctly will basically reduce the amount that an expression affects your blend shapes whilst you're speaking. And the reason why that's good is because it's often the case that when you're speaking, you'll make face shapes that match expression shapes. A good example here might be sticking your tongue out, right? The face tracker might detect that you're sticking your tongue out, but it's just because you're saying one of the phonemes. By the way, phonemes are the names for like the individual mouth movements you do, and they're like language independent. The phonemes that you do might include a tongue flick or a tongue poke, like some phonemes do have that. And the face tracker is like, you're poking your tongue out. And then in the middle of like a serious sentence, you're like, we're gathered here today to give our condolences to this massive cheese board that Prime consumed in one sitting. And in the middle of that, you're like smiling, winking, putting your tongue out, like doing like the bedroomized blend shape. And it's just like, what? Whereas if you configure the volume suppression weight, it'll basically be like, all right, there is volume coming out of their microphone. I will suppress these expressions. So do take a look at that one. I have issues on a variety of avatars where the eyebrows on the avatar were basically doing sort of like sine waves because like loads of blend shapes were firing at once. And so you could sort of music equalizer my eyebrows at one point. And that fixed by doing a bunch of volume suppression weight stuff. Additionally, the regular Visium analyzer, I know this is a long explanation, but hey, documentation. The direct Visium driver, just getting the name because the direct Visium driver also has voice mouth suppressed weight. I don't know if it's in my notes, but do take a look at that one as well. I'd have to look how that one works. That one just like jump scared me. But you can put the mouth tracking source into the direct Visium driver as well. And in that case, what it'll do is if you're not speaking, it can still detect the Visium shapes and activate those based on that, which is a great way to get around the whole multiple sources driving the same blend shape problem. It allows you to drive all of the Visium blend shapes using your mouth, which means that when you're not talking, you can still do things like ooh or ee or ah. Ah being a common one for opening your mouth, you know, but that's when you go to the doctor, they're like, say ah, right? You can do that by assigning the mouth tracking source to that. Of course, if you have enough blend shapes to not require that, go for it. But there you go. Just a random anecdote whilst you're here. If you have a blend shape which is triggered either via the facial tracker or via gestures or anything like that, that involves closing your eyes, you know, some people do it, they're like, oh, I've got my eyes closed. Consider not doing that, and instead consider going to the eye manager and using, I think it's like eye close override there, because if you do that via eye close override, it will signal to the eye manager to stop you from blinking. Because what I see on a ton of avatars is their eyes are closed due to a gesture, but the eye manager is still desperately trying to make them blink. And so what you get is what I call like a closed eye blink. But it's no issue, but like if you really want finesse, go take a look at the eye manager and see if you can get around that. It can suppress the blinks if you set some of those properties. It's also great because, again, multiple blend shapes, multiple drivers, right? You won't need two eye closed blend shapes. You need one blink blend shape for each eye, and then you can use the stuff. The subtract limits, yeah, I have no idea how those work. I'll have to take a look at those, what those were. I seem to remember as well, there was like something in the eye manager that was designed to enable texture-based eyes and texture-based Visiums to work a little bit better, but I can't remember what that is. The eye manager is amazing. There's loads of stuff that can be done there, so do take a look at that. I'm going to move on to the next question, as I've been talking for a long, long time about that particular question. Hanu says, where do subs and bits money go from the nearest Twitch channel? To bank accounts controlled by Carol. Don't know where they go based on that. So with that, I believe we are done on questions. If you have any other questions, please do let me know and I'll get back to you. Mike, that's a good question, which is, what's a good way for having multiple languages of text for a world or object? I've seen a bunch of ways to do that. I think the simplest way I've seen to do that is like a value multiplexer where you assign each language that you support an ID and then use a dynamic variable to specify which language ID that you're using. The end goal for that is for us to open up the translation system that we use for the rest of Neos's locale to you guys for custom locale files. Currently, we're restricted to just one file, and we're already seeing the sort of stresses of that. For example, all of the Neos the Universe translation strings are in the main locale file, and there is no way that that should ever happen, but alas, it has. There's a bunch of stuff in the Japanese community area where they do their best to accommodate Korean and English, which may show you some alternative ways of doing that. But that's the way I've done it in the past. Then I've also actually just sort of like hacked apart the locale system because I can do that so that it has those strings. Oh, you should also, when you're building UI, look through the locale files that we have and see if there's any locale strings you can just steal. Things like okay, yes, cancel, no, are probably in the locale files. You can just steal those and use our locale system and you'll get, you know, however many languages we have, that one word like yes or okay will be translated for all of those languages. Big question here from Lex, who says, I ran into an issue of a user where they had more than 512 depth of children object, which prevented them from learning a world. Is there any reason as why the max depth limit is 512? Would you happen to know why it lets you save but not load the object world? This is an interesting one, and it's caused by lack of standards. So Neos being a indie, in air quotes, early access, in air quotes, beta, in air quotes, application that is developed by one person, it doesn't have many standards. So at a corporate setting, or maybe even like a AAA setting, a limit like 512, wherever the hell it is, would have involved like meetings, paperwork, and emails. And I'm not saying Neos needs to do that, but the point is, once that limit is decided, it will be standardized everywhere. So a component depth, a slot depth, everywhere in Neos would be 512, and it would probably link to, in a roundabout fashion, however you want to do it in C#, it would link to the same configuration variable or property or maybe even a def hashtag define and C sharp, such that it is like mandatedly defined everywhere as a standard. If you want to look that up, it's something called like magic strings or magic numbers in code. It's basically like if you have a number, link it to a variable, and then you can document what that variable means, and you can also change it, which means that you aren't in the future magically hunting for that. As a good example here, it's hard-coded somewhere. Oh, yeah, I was looking at how noise works in Neos, and we use this library called FastNoise, and it does this really weird thing where, like, its noise, like, members, so, like, fields and functions and whatever you want to call them, within its library, they do this weird thing where they had a return type that I didn't recognize. So I'll just post an example here. They had this return type. And I'm like, that's a bit weird. What the hell is FN decimal? And so I looked it up, and FN decimal is defined using C-sharp defines, where if you enable the C-sharp definition of use doubles, then FN decimal will be a double. Otherwise, it will be a single, right? And so that's standardization, right? It's we're putting this in place, and we're using FN decimal, because then that means with one click of our build, we can swap between using system.double and system.single everywhere in the code base. And then it was a tangent into like development, but yeah, that's that. We'd have to probably like overhaul a lot of stuff to like get that standardized. It's probably just like a weird edge case. There's going to be a bunch of them. There was another edge case I found where it's just like, cool, don't know why, but cool. I think it's in the value graph recorder. I've just opened it up. Yeah, here we go. So the value graph recorder, for those who don't know, that is what allows you to... Well, that's what I'm saying, right? So in saving, we use a different standard depth limit than in loading, maybe. I'd have to look it up, right? So somewhere in the save routine, there is a number greater than 512. And then somewhere in the load routine, there is a number less than 512. I'd have to look into it more, but that's probably what's happened. I've noticed that a couple of times. Back onto that example. So the value graph recorder basically will record graphs into an array that you can't touch, but it's used for the graph meshes, the line waveform meshes that exist. You are, and there's a points value on that component, and that is essentially just the size of the array that holds those values for that graph. I usually have it at about 1,000. That's usually good. If you want like really short-term data, you want 250. But I found out the other day the maximum value for that is 524288. And I'm like, cool. Is that a binary number? I don't know off the top of my head, but that is the maximum number of values you could have a value graph recorder. I don't know. There is a comment here which says limit to roughly 500,000 values. I would say that 524,000 is actually over 500,000 by 24,000, but like that number was there and it was decided on. I don't know the reason why it was decided on there, which leads into a sort of anecdote. Comments in code get a lot of bad reputation because, you know, you get stuff like I'm typing, sorry. You get people saying like, yeah, there's why we don't do comments in our code, because it's obvious what the code is doing. But what you should do with comments is explain why the code is doing that. So in this case, it's really difficult because signing A to 1 is very difficult to describe, but maybe, you know, A being 1 is very important to the mathematics we're doing, so it's like, we need this to be 1 because of Pythagoras, right? And then, like, someone coming back through that code when they see that, and they're like, hang on a minute, why is A 1? And they're like, oh, because of Pythagoras, although maybe there's a link to a GitHub issue or some other issue tracking there that's like, this is why, here's the decision, here's the design document. That's good commenting, not just assign the value of 1 to A. It's ridiculous. So I'm seeing more of that in the Neos code base since I've joined, really. I don't know if I'm just sort of like accidentally encouraging that, but I do see it a lot there. I also do it to help reviews sometimes, which is a little bit of like a misnomer. You shouldn't do it to help reviews, but sometimes I do. You know, if I think like something is going to be stringently reviewed in a code review, I'll add some extra comments explaining why the hell that's happened. And usually that is a double duty, right? It means the next person coming through that code is just like, oh, that's why that code looks like a piece of crap, because of these reasons. But sometimes it's like, it's there just for, I shouldn't be there. But there we go. I can look into that one list, Lex, if you would like. I'm going to go ahead and find that skirt video in the lull that we have and look into that. But we'll be ending off shortly. So if you guys have any more questions, do let me know and I'll get to them as soon as I can. I'm going to go find that VR chat skirt just shortly. All right, I come back from the land of mute to link you Your Skirt Sucks, Zero to Hero. I haven't watched the video in a long time, So I don't remember it being that sort of brash in its wording. But it takes a common avatar that you saw in VRChat about the time when it was uploaded, removes its like 12 skirt bones and replaces it with 3 or 4 skirt bones and shows you how to weight paint them successfully. It's a really good video for me just saying, like, I was learning, like, weight painting can't just be throw bones at the problem. Because that's what I kept doing, you know. And if you look at, like, AAA games, that's usually what they do because they're controlling the engine, they can do that. Like, yes, there is, like, chest 22 bone, and you're like, what the hell does that do? But, you know, in a situation like Neos and VRChat, you don't need as many bones. All right, let's go down. Lex says, why does your main avatar have obfuscated names to the bones when that specific method is on the things to list? Isn't simple avatar protection enough? I did that a long time ago, and undoing it is difficult. That is why that exists. There's this like problem with avatars where the longer that your avatar has been in Neos and has been edited, the less stuff makes sense. I think like the other week I found a box child 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 parented to a random part of my avatar with nothing on it, not even a box mesh, strangely. Which I, of course, just deleted, but it meant at a certain point, I thought it was a good idea to parent box child 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 to my avatar for some reason and then save it. I don't know if it's like something was parented to that, like a system or something, but it wasn't doing anything then. So I yeeted it. All right, Rob, if you have a final question, do let me know. I'll go find the hyenate avatar. I typed a really bad spelling of it into Google and it came up with a Hyundai car. If anyone knows the avatar I'm referring to and is able to actually spell it or has it bookmarked, please, please do drop it in the chat. I know some of you got it. Like, I guarantee someone's got it. It's quite a popular avatar. A VRC Arena has probably got it. Yeah, there it is. Here you go. So, and I'll get the picture I was referring to. So in this outfit here, the jacket doesn't clip with, I don't know, clothing names, the tube top, and the shorts are just really good, and there's like, I've never seen any trouble with the shoes. I don't know what to call those either, but I've just seen like nothing, like the weight painting's really good on those. You can even kind of see it in that pose, right? The shorts are bending in a way that to me makes sense. Whereas sometimes when I make clothes and I, you know, bend the legs to test, I'm just like, what the hell is happening to those bones? Last question from Rob before we leave off here says, are you guys hiring rigging artists or any other type of 3D artists? Not currently. I'm not hiring anyone currently. If that changes, I hopefully will let you know. I can't promise anything there. It depends on how things change and who's doing it. That'll be it for today, though. Lex, I will look into that 512 issue. I guarantee that if I just search the code base for like 512, I'll probably find it. But I'll take a look. And I'll get back to you. Otherwise, thanks for attending. Thanks for your questions, and I will get back to you soon.